What's up, everybody? It's Roger and James here, founder of This Kingdom Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be kind of just talking a little bit about ourselves in terms of our history with comic books, because you know, we like reading comic books, and we've been reading comic books probably for a long time, and just thought we'd go back and just kind of talk about our history as when we started out. So I'll kick things off. First off,
go ahead.
Yeah. Way back when I was a wee little lad, and I used to go to my corner shop, which literally was on the corner of my little street, and I used to pick up every single week the Fino and the Dandy, which was a comic book that I used to have it put back. I used to write my little name in pencil on it. It was like 20p, and it had characters like Dennis the Menace. You had like the Backstreet Kids. You had, and then in like the Dandy, you had Desperate Dan, Banana Man. Now, these were all, these are like quintessential English comic books. You know, you had Roger Dodger, Minnie the Minx, Dennis the Menace. You know, these are classic kids' comic books. They were cheap, they were cheerful. You know, it was probably most of them. I know you guys had Dennis the Menace, but you had this really weird cartoon series that was nothing like the series we had over here.
Completely different character, just shared a name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about any of these characters until, frankly, recently, relatively speaking, probably within the last couple of years. But my understanding is these comics would be to Britain what, say, Tintin would be to France, something like that. They're if you ask most British people, they'll at least be aware of these characters.
So, yeah, they're iconic. They are, you know, proper British comic books, and that's what started me off really was. So it wasn't. You know, they were so easy available. They were cheap. They used to even have strips in the newspapers. They were mainstream. They've kind of fell away from, like, they're not probably as popular as they used to be. And they've kind of, it was always, you know, older generations that used to, this was around way for us, way before anything else. But I think over time they've fell away. They've had animated series and stuff, but I don't think they've quite have got the same impact on younger kids now as they did when I was younger, or even when my dad used to read it when he was a kid, kind of thing.
No, kids these days, they have Peppa Pig now, so you know, they don't need the Dandy anymore.
So where did you start?
So 1993-94, I had a friend, his name was Keith, and he was reading comics, and he was doing what most kids did in the 90s, which was subscribe directly to the comics through Marvel themselves. We did have a comic shop, but direct subscription was just easier. He renewed his subscription for the X-Men, and for whatever reason, they ended up shipping him one issue twice, because it was the end of the previous subscription, and then it was the start of the new subscription. So he had this extra copy of X-Men number 28, written by Fabian Nicieza, and that he was just like, here, you want this? I'm like, sure. And I read it. It was the first comic book I ever read outside of like an Archie Digest in some like doctor's office or something. I knew, of course, some of the basics of the X-Men. I knew who Wolverine was. Yeah. That was pretty much what I knew. And I was very, very annoyed because X-Men 28 actually doesn't have Wolverine in it. It's got Sabretooth. I did not know at the time. This was right after Wolverine lost all of the adamantium in the Fatal Attraction story. But I did find a character that I really liked in it, and that was Jean Grey, because she beat the absolute snot out of Sabretooth without even lifting a finger. She was just like Sabretooth going through the entire issue of he's intimidating the characters. He intimidates Jubilee. He intimidates Psylocke. Even some of the male characters just like, nah, I'm not dealing with this. And then Jean Grey's just like, sit down, take your shots. Here's your food. Don't bother anyone. And Sabretooth's just like, yes, ma'am. And I was just like, so I've liked Jean Grey as a character ever since then. Just very happy to have her back in X-Men Red. But that was the first book I ever read, X-Men number 28. And last year, I was lucky enough to find that the writer, Fabian Nicieza, was at, I think it was Baltimore Comic Con. So I was able to bring that comic from 1994 that I got from my friend Keith, and I got it signed by the writer. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So that's kind of, see, I can't really, that kind of thing of like, I can't really remember exactly what my first comic books were.
The only reason I remember it is because I was just like, this woman is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it really stuck with me. Otherwise, you know, if I had read, you know, random Spider-Man fighting Mysterio issue, I probably wouldn't remember what it was.
Yeah. See, this is the thing. If like, I mean, I was in the 90s. I was so into my, like the animated series. We had the Batman animated series, the Superman one. We had Spider-Man. We had the X-Men. They were all on Saturday morning television. I watched them, you know, and recorded them. And I was the only one that could work out how to use the timer on them, on the, you know, that kind of day when they had to set to. So I used to watch all them. But I used to remember going, because living in a little seaside resort, I used to the local, like, you know, tourist shop would sell bags of like random comic books for like a quid, a pound. So you'd get like 10 comic books for a pound. They were completely all over the place. They were not even, you know, you're talking Image, DC, Marvel, you know, you jump in middle of a series. You had no idea what was going on, but I loved them because I had like dozens and dozens of, you know, you had brought like, I'd buy 10 comics or buy 20 comics. I read them all. I had no clue what was going on. Might have why I've set myself up as when I do read comics, I never have a clue what's going on because I'm always potching around because that's how I started. And that's kind of like how I got into comics was through this system of just randomly reading stuff. So I, for a few years, I just randomly would pick up these packets. It wasn't until I got to college when I was 16, because that's where we got my best mate. He was an avid comic book reader. He had long boxes everywhere, you know, every day while we're at college, we would go down to my little corner comic book store and we would go in every single day on our lunch break, and he'd buy comic books. I'd buy one comic book or just browse them all, but I got into the thing of I just used to read all of his for like 2 years, actually for about 4 years. I didn't buy any. I just used to go to the comic book shop, let him spend his money, and then I'd read them. I don't think I ever actually, it was that thing of like, yeah, my collection, I still have a long box full of bits and pieces, and I used to buy them afterwards and stuff, but for a number of years, I just didn't really bother with them again. And then I think it was actually when I got my first iPad, like, well, probably about 5 years ago, when I found Marvel Unlimited was when I got back into reading comic books, was when I could do it digitally. And then I sort of skipped over back into buying new ones again. But yeah, I was probably not the best kid for like reading comic books because I just used to read my mates.
In fact, it was comic books that got me and that led me to buy an iPad in the first place.
Yeah.
Not for the same reason. I was still reading comics at the time, but I was like, the second they announced the iPad, I was like, oh, this is perfect. If it's the right dimensions, which of course it was, I can get the comics digitally. I can just carry my entire comics library around with me. I don't have to carry 50, 60 long buttons. I never had that many, but you know, I had plenty of long boxes worth of comics. I was just like, yes, if I can digitize this entire collection and just carry it around on an iPad, sign me up right now. And it was, not to sidetrack it too much, it was great because there was an Apple store in the area when the iPad first came out and the line was, you know, around the corner. I was like, whatever. I'll get it some later date. I don't have to. And for whatever reason, I stopped at the Best Buy, which was literally right next door. And I was like, oh yeah, let me check. And I walk over. You have any iPads? Oh yeah, we got a bunch right here. You want one? Sure.
Yeah. So it definitely like reinvigorated. For me, it was like it took it from being this collectible that I read and I leave in the you know, you got to bag it and board it and then you put it in a box and then every time I move, I have to move these boxes. And it just used to take up space. And I used to resent this thing of like, oh, they just sit there getting, they're worthless. Let's be honest. If you go on and have a look at your collection and put them onto eBay and you're getting 10 pence, no one wants issue number 72 of, you know, that whole idea of collecting comic books. Once I got rid of that from my head, and it was just like buying a newspaper or buying a magazine at and you read it and you throw it away, kind of that kind of territory of, you know, you don't keep every magazine you ever read. It's just like, no, it's a consumable product that was made to be collected. And digital allows for that kind of feeling of just read it, and it doesn't take up any space, and I move on, and I enjoy it so much more now because I can do that. Because when I was younger and I used to buy them, it was all about, you know, bagging them, boarding them, and storing them, and or who's got the best collection, or the rest of it. Now I just enjoy it because I enjoy the stories, and I probably enjoy it more now than I did when I used to buy them and have them sort of collecting and stuff.
Yeah, when I was growing up, once I got into high school and college and whatnot, which is when eBay started to become huge, my comic collection exploded at that point, because it was like, you mean I can get entire runs of comics for like $10? Yeah, my room was basically just long boxes at that point. I think even my parents were like, are you actually reading all these? I'm like, yeah, totally. I'm totally reading all these. But anyway, this idea that, you know, once I picked up one comic of, let's say, West Coast Avengers, I'd pick up, you know, a run of those and be like, well, now I just got to get the rest of them, don't I? Yeah. And the day that I finally broke that mentality where I was like, no, I don't. I don't have to do that. I remember it was in the early 2000s, because it was like, I really liked the first part of a story. I don't even remember what book it was, but I liked the story, and then the creative team change was like, now this is awful. This book is terrible, but I already have the first six. I've got to keep going. Wait, no, I don't. I don't have to. And then there was another thing where the opposite happened, where I was like, I'm not interested in these, but then a writer I really like came on. I was like, oh, I want to read this because I like this writer. That means I have to read the other comic. Wait, no, I don't. I can just start where the writer starts. And I realize that that sounds very silly and stupid and obvious, but for someone who was up to that point very heavy into collecting comics, I even worked at a comic shop at the time, that revelation was both terrifying and liberating all at once. It was like, no, I don't have to get comics by people I don't like because they relate to comics that I do like. I can just read the comics I like, and I know what happens in the other ones. And that's even more true today than it was back then, because if I can go, I don't want to read Doomsday Clock. That's the story that DC is putting out that mashes up the Watchmen and the DC universe. And like, I read the first couple issues, and it's just not my thing. I'm not interested at all. If it gets referenced in other stories, I can just go, hold on, let me go check the Wikipedia page. All right, cool. Up to speed.
Yeah.
And now I keep on going. I can do that with the Marvel books too. Like, we're at the time of this recording, I realize there's a delay gap in there, but the Time Warp or the Infinity Warp books are coming out right now. And if for some reason one or two of those books kicks off and those characters make it into the Marvel Universe, I don't have to read the comics for those series. Because right now, so far, those comics have been awful, just straight up terrible. And I can just go, nope, I will start where the good story starts. And the Time Warp books are footnotes.
So. Yeah, no, it's just because I think I always was drawn to miniseries. You know, they were like one of six, one of 12s. Because they were so much easier to get into. It was always that intimidating thing of Spider-Man number 672. I've not read the other 671. I better just pick up Spider-Man miniseries. And it was, because, right, you know, and there's that kind of thing of, you know, you walk into that little comic book shop and you see all that stuff. And yeah, you know, you pick them up and you look at the covers and all the rest of it. I think I used to spend more time reading my mate's Previews magazine. Because it was always, I think it was actually, it used to be free, didn't it? The Previews? Or you used to buy it? Well, I always remember it was that kind of thing. I used to buy the Previews magazine. It was like a telephone book.
Oh, yeah. No, it's huge.
And it was always that thing of, like, you could read that and kind of catch up on everything. Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder now. There was a big, well, I'll call it a scandal, but, you know, it's only a blip on the footnote of history. But it was, I don't remember the specifics, but one of the characters, I think it might have been Thunderstrike actually, was killed in a story that happened in 1 month. But the solicitations that, you know, what are in Previews in the telephone book, the month after that book came out where Thunderstrike dies, but still before the book had actually been on shelves, came out and was like, Thunderstrike is dead and this is what's happening. And people are like, wait, what? Thunderstrike's dead? And it spoiled the entire book because, like, well, there goes that surprise ending. Ever since then, the companies have been very cryptic in their previews. So they try to keep plot points out of it. And you get a lot of solicitations now, which are like, and then redacted thing happened. And oh my goodness, blank shows up. And you're like, really? Come on. You're not even trying. And I'm not self-censoring. That's literally what it says. Yeah. It will say redacted. And I'm just like, come on.
Yeah. maybe to change the word around a bit. But no, it's very kind of one of those funny things, really, of, you know, everyone's kind of got their own history. Everyone's got their own way of getting it. Everyone's got connected with different characters. I think it was the movies and the animated series, which was always the bigger draw for me. You know, I remember just watching like the Spider-Man cartoons and having videotapes of the Fantastic Four and Spider-Man and his amazing friends. And yeah, and then something like the Batman animated series come along, and the Spider-Man that used to be on in the 90s, those were two very good cartoon series that incorporated so much of the comic book and worked so well. That really got me probably through the 90s was between that and comic books. That was probably, it's only probably really when I was in my 20s, I started paying a lot less attention to it because we had so many movies coming out and other things going on in your life. And I went off traveling for months on end every winter. So there was that kind of thing of like the 20s, I kind of disappeared. But really for most of the 90s, I was heavily involved in like the Marvel and DC. But like obviously the 80s were just all about Bino and Danny. I don't know if it was like the odd Disney book, but I think it was the cost, you know, a Marvel book or a DC book or Disney or something like that would have been like 10 times the cost of the Bino or the Danny.
Right. And more than that, like you mentioned, the animated show was more than enough for most people. There's this myth in the comics industry that the movies, the MCU, the DCEU, the animated shows, all of these things will drive people to the comic stores. And while it's true, because I worked in a comic shop when X-Men came out, when Spider-Man came out, when the first, I think it was the tail end, one of the Blade movies came out. Heck, even some of the independent, like American Splendor, I think, came out in theaters at around that time. And we would get one or two people who would come in and be like, hey, what do you got for X-Men? And then they would look at what the publishers come in like, none of this makes any sense. And then they would walk out without buying anything. But it would literally be like two or three people out of all the millions and millions of people who saw those movies. Now, granted, I'm talking about a worldwide scale for the millions and a, you know, two or three people for local. But I think it still applies because even today, the most successful comic books, like the event comics, the huge massive releases only sell around 200,000 copies. Maybe 400,000 is the peak that we've hit. Even back in the day, the X-Men number one, and we're talking about the 90s series, not the 1970s series, it sold 1 million copies. That's 1 million people who read X-Men number one. Even the most bombiest of bomb movies had more than that number of people see it. Superhero, I should specify. Yeah. Obviously, there have been movies that have seen way less than that. But even movies like Catwoman or Spider-Man 3, which we talked about, a couple weeks ago, probably at this point, millions of people saw those. More people have seen those movies than have read the comics. And that's just the way it is. But somehow the comics are still the source. So
yeah, it's kind of that thing really of like the comic books are the source, they are the inspiration, they are the thing that keeps going along, and you know they are making money at it and they're doing it, but it's the original home of these stories, and they're probably, you know, they're easier to produce, cheaper to produce, and people buy them and stuff. But it's that kind of thing of maybe digitally, you know, maybe that has made it a lot easier. I still think there's still like a stigma about, the whole stigma about liking Star Wars or about liking superheroes and things like that has kind of, it's become mainstream. You know, you see people walking along with Marvel t-shirts and Marvel bags and all the rest of it. If I had all this stuff back when I was, you know, a teenager, it would have been fantastic. You know, this is mainstream culture. It's in the supermarkets. It's everywhere. You want some of it. No, but back in the 90s, you were geek or a dork.
You were a social pariah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, we do live at an age now where it's like, I kind of was sat there the other day and we sort of said something, and my wife literally did just turn around. She said, you know, you are just becoming, it's like the Big Bang Theory is just becoming more and more of just a, that's just your life of just like, you know, you read comics, you play miniature games, you play Star Wars, and you read comics and all this stuff, and it's like, and you wear these t-shirts and stuff, and she looks at Big Bang Theory and goes, well, that's just basically my husband there. And she's going, it's that kind of thing of it. It's become mainstream. And it's hard maybe now to think back to, you know, back to the 90s and stuff. There's pictures of me with my Spider-Man outfit and Spider-Man toys when I was 3 or 4 years old, but I never grew out of it.
Yeah, and I think there were a lot of comic readers who grew out of it, obviously. If there were, in fact, 1 million people who read X-Men #1, well, a lot of them grew out of it or fell out of it, because there aren't that many people reading comics anymore. Plenty of people watching the movies, plenty of people watching the TV shows. But yeah, the readers aren't there. But Marvel, DC, Image, all of these guys are doing great business by farming out their ideas as movies and television shows. Mm. You know, a comic book is basically just a storyboard if you really want to look at it. Most comics, you can just go, all right, cut that panel out. That storyboard #1, cut that panel out, that storyboard #2, and so on and so forth. And they're basically made as TV pilots, which are so much cheaper to produce than an actual TV pilot. And Marvel is definitely using this. Disney is definitely using Marvel as an idea farm. It wouldn't surprise me if Warner Brothers was using DC as a content farm. We know that Image is basically a content farm. Most of the books that they have get optioned as TV shows. So,
I mean, you think now of like how many TV shows and movies and stuff are based on comic books. And like you say, how many people are reading comic books? But you go back to like when we're talking about when we were buying comic books and then the 80s and the 90s and the noughties, you know, it was different. And you didn't have the output you've got now, because there was that time, if I wanted to know what was going on in Spider-Man, I had the cartoon series. But there would be times where it wasn't on, so if the only way you could find out what's going on with Spider-Man was in the comic books. Whereas like now, so many hero stuff, there's so much Marvel stuff coming out and DC stuff that you've got a new television show every few days. You've constantly got entertainment coming at you, new movies, new trailers, stuff, video games, etc. You know, it was very different then. And so therefore, comic books were often one of the only ways really of kind of being in that world.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very easily accessible world. And as you had with your friend, if you bought a comic book, you could very easily hand it off to somebody else and share that world with them. Whereas a television show, especially back then, unless you taped it on a VHS, you would have to describe what happened if your friend didn't end up watching it.
Yeah, very, 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 very different. And as a whole, you know, it's just cool. But it's always that kind of thing of, you know, I just thought it'd be nice just to kind of share some of like how we got into it and kind of where we all started from, so you guys know where it was. But we'd love to know where you guys, what was your first comic book, or what was some of your early comic book memories? We'd love to know your thoughts. Go check us out over at DizKingdom.com. Like, follow, subscribe, etc. So on. James, where can they find you?
Find me, HeroicLegacy.com.
And on that note, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.